This is the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media. Now, here's Jason Jones.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome to the Jason Jones Show. I am your host, Jason Jones, broadcasting from the beautiful west side of Oahu, kind of. I'm in Texas, but my guest, State Representative Bob McDermott, is calling in from Eva Beach. And before I welcome you, I'm just doing this straight. Normally, I do the introduction afterwards, but I'm just going right into it. But before I bring in Representative Bob McDermott, I want to let you know this episode is being brought to you by the Vulnerable People Project. The Vulnerable People Project sponsors this show, and they are also the reason why we haven't been doing a lot of shows, because we have been overwhelmed with our work in Afghanistan. And if you're like, I didn't know you were doing work in Afghanistan, that's because you're not a supporter. So go to thegreatcampaign.org, become a monthly contributor. We will inundate you relentlessly with emails updating you on our work that you will often think, I need to unsubscribe, but you will not unsubscribe. So go to thegreatcampaign.org. When you support us, you are supporting the most vulnerable people in the world. And this episode is also being brought to you by the best product, the best brand on the planet Earth, MyPillow. And Christmas is coming up. So if you want deep discounts on the Giza Dream Sheets, the mattress topper, the bathrobes, these wonderful slippers, go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square, use the code Jones, and buy all of your Christmas presents there. And when you do that, you not only get the best pillow on earth, the best slippers on earth, the best mattress topper on earth, you support our work. So go to mypillow.com, radio listener square, and use the code Jones. State Representative Bob McDermott, welcome to the Jason Jones Show.
Hey, Jason, I'm going to buy some of those slippers just because I'm going to put the Jones tag in there, and I'm going to buy some of them.
Okay, can I tell you, I keep them at my desk. I'm going to put them on my feet right now. Hold on. Oh, my gosh. They're indoors and outdoors. And they're styling. Oh, yeah. These are not the Hawaiian style slippers, brother. These are plush.
Yeah, flip-flop.
They're the mainlanders call flip-flops. No, these things are plush. You know what it is? It's like having the Ritz-Carlton on your feet. It's like walking around barefoot in the presidential suite of the Trump Hotel.
Huh? A cloud of air.
Yeah, no, they're the best. It's the best of the best.
I do have the MyPillow, and I like that because I can adjust it to, just like he says in the commercial, you can adjust it for yourself. You know, it's not one size fits all. You know, you can play with it and adjust it, and it holds its shape. So,
do you have the Giza Dream Sheets and the mattress topper?
No, I don't have the Giza Dream
Sheets. It's amazing. It's the best. The mattress topper is the best. The best.
Yeah.
You got to get the mattress topper. It's unbelievable. I have a very expensive bed, the Tempur-Pedic bed. So my wife will not let me put the mattress topper on the Tempur-Pedic bed. So we use the mattress topper, for like the family to like lay around and play board games and stuff. But what I will often do is go to the game room, the family room, whatever, the parlor, whatever you want to call it. And I will fall asleep on the mattress topper while I'm listening to a book on tape on Audible. Audible does not sponsor the show, and I always talk about Audible. I need to get them to sponsor the show.
Well, now that you left Hawaii, you can actually, you have a house that actually has some room in it, right? I mean, your house in Hawaii had room, but I'm sure this one's probably bigger, right?
So it's 1,000 square feet bigger. Then we finished the garage, which adds another 800 square feet. And we just looked at our home in Hawaii, which we sold for a lot, but it's now over $1 million for that little house we had, Bob.
Yeah.
On Zillow.
What's
going on over there?
So the median home price is over $1 million now. That, of course, that's not the average. That's the median, right in the middle. But any single family home, particularly if it's newer, is eight. You know, if it's a small townhouse, you're looking at 800,000. You know, a duplex to a single dwelling like the one you had, 5,000 square foot lot, over $1 million. And you're, of course, you're buying the land because you're on an island. That's what you're really paying for, right? That slice, that sliver of earth, because they don't make any more of that. So it's tough for young families, right? How do you, if you're 24 years old and you want to buy a house, how do you do that when it's $1 million? I mean, it's just, it's
you don't. You do not. You don't. Yeah, you moved to Vegas. Right. So the reason I wanted to have you on rep is because since August 13th, as you know, my organization, we've been working aggressively to evacuate and resettle Christians, other ethnic minorities, and those who fought alongside the U.S. Armed Forces in the war against the Taliban to the United States and other countries. It's been really stressful and depressing, and I thought, I want to do a really upbeat show. The one thing we know and I just want to talk about water with you. Hawaii's beautiful, fresh. Yeah. The one thing we know we can count on is that Hawaii has the purest water on earth, right? So let's just talk about that, something, you know, happy.
So under normal circumstances, it up in the mountains, on these dormant volcanoes, as you know, Jason, you lived here forever, it rains every day. Little showers, it's probably 4 in the afternoon, up at the top on the windward side. It rains. The water goes into the mountain. It takes about 25 years for that raindrop to make its way through the volcanic rock, through the topsoil, and get down into the aquifer. But it's filtered by this volcanic rock, right? It's pristine. And so our water, up till very recently, we just bring it right out of the mountain, not treated. It wasn't treated at all. It was tested, but it wasn't treated. It's just fresh spring water, if you will. And that's what we drank. Now, of course, we have a problem. The military wells, which are not connected to the city, I say again, not connected to the city wells, are contaminated with fuel. Because in World War II, the Navy built 20 ginormous fuel tanks underground. So the Japanese couldn't bomb them. And they were in a mountain on a rock called basalt, which is somewhat impervious to anything except the cracks. So fuel can make its way through the cracks. Well, these 188 million gallons, 188 million in those 20 tanks. I think only 17 of them are operable right now. Each tank holds 12.5 million gallons of fuel. Each tank's about 350 feet high. I mean, they're just huge. And it was an engineering wonder when they built these things in World War II. And it was done in secret. In fact, the whole facility was secret, classified until 1995, because it's a strategic asset. So now World War II is over, right? So now fully one-third of all the fuel in the forward Pacific sits in Honolulu underneath the mountain. The problem is, that fuel tank farm is 100 feet above our aquifer, our only EPA sole source aquifer. And now that they're 80 years old, age and wear and tear is starting to manifest itself in more frequent leaks and flumes and spills, whatever the hell you want to call it. And they're 80 years old. You have metal fatigue, like an airplane. It gets cracked, little cracks, pinholes. Those leaks then make their way to a concrete containment tank, which I describe as like a cup that holds these steel tanks in place. So imagine a coffee cup, and you put a big steel tank in there. These concrete containment tanks hold, and they're supposed to act as a secondary backstop against any leaks. The problem or the challenge is they're 80 years old now. It's very moist up there. The moisture has gotten into the cracks in the concrete, is undermining the rebar, The rebarb is sprawling, and in places you literally have chunks that have just popped out of this secondary containment. And it's inaccessible to be repaired. You just can't get in there and repair it because the way they built it. There's no room. There was a study in 2007 that said, the concrete containment tanks cannot be maintained. That was 12 years ago. And so we've reached a situation now where we had some leaks recently. The last 10 days, military families were getting sick because there was petroleum in their drinking water on the Navy system going into their house. So it's been a major disaster, if you will, for the military families. And they're flushing the system. They are trying to determine where the point of entry is. One of two things happened. The fuel, which is either diesel or jet fuel. There's no gasoline. It's mostly for the airplanes at Hickam Air Force Base. As the Navy now is mostly nuclear, right? There's a few diesel subs, but the preponderance of the Navy vessels are nuclear powered destroyers, submarines, whatnot. The jets still run on aviation fuel, and then the diesel vehicles, the Humvees, the Cuckbees, the 5 tons, those all run on diesel. So those are the two types of fuel that are up there. And either the fuel came through a runoff into the well closest to us through an infiltration gallery. An infiltration gallery allows rainwater and runoff to come into the aquifer quicker than the 25 years it would normally take going through the soil to replenish the water level, right? It either came in that way, or the worst case is that it's from previous leaks that made their way through the soil some 25 years ago and now are finally coming home to roost, which could be the case. We just don't know yet. So we have a major crisis, the military families. It's unbelievable. And something quite interesting, Jason, our congressional delegation we have two House members who are two junior, and there's only two of them, so they can't get any money. And we have two senators, Mazie Hirono and Brian Schatz. Both are hyperpartisan, Mazie very loudly, Schatz very quietly. They need to secure $4 to $10 billion, billion with a B, to relocate these tanks. That ain't going to happen. So these wokesters, these lefties, these climate change warriors, in fact, Schatz flew to Scotland and Paris for these recent Biden Accords and meetings, are silent when it comes to their own local water being polluted because they don't have the wherewithal to get an appropriation to tell the Navy to relocate it because they're hyper-partisanship. I mean, imagine a guy who cares about the sea level rise in Belize, his own backyard is being polluted with fuel, and all he can say is, put the EPA in charge. I'm angry. We need an investigation. We need an inspector general. No, we don't. We know what's happening. They're old and they leak.
So, Bob, I got to go to these tanks. I got to go and visit them 20 years ago, thanks to you, when you were running the Navy League. And I got to go. It's amazing. It's like a 30-story building, right? When you go in there and you look up and you take these elevators down and your ears pop. And it's really unbelievable. Yeah. You were a Marine. You're a combat veteran.
It's an engineering marvel.
Yeah, you're pro-military. And
I have two sons in the Navy. Another son is a Marine veteran. I was in the Marines for 8 years. My baby is at Marine Corps boot camp as we speak.
There you have it. So,
and you were in the Army. Your son was in the Army. We're all proud of the military. We love the military. And that's why when we talk about something like this, as pro-military guys, we have credibility. We're not lefties who hate the military. We love the military, but we got a problem.
Well, I think having potable water supply for your community is also a part of national security, right? If you look at the transnational agreements that made Hawaii food insecure that took place in the early 90s, and now we're not only going to be food insecure, but we're going to be water insecure. And the people that said they fight for ag and they fight for local communities were silent when our ag industry was decimated. And it's striking for me to watch all the way from over here on the mainland now. And I see that you're leading this charge. It must be very awkward. You know, but Bob, you know, it's what's happening in Hawaii. It's everywhere. These environmental warriors, these green warriors, all they talk about is global warming. But their local rivers, lakes, and streams are being decimated, and they're absolutely silent because they have to bump into really powerful special interests. But the very powerful special interests actually support you mouthing off about climate change, right? But now you've bumped into the most powerful special interests, and what you're saying is you're not saying close down the bases. You're saying we need to keep the water secure, and we need to the military to have access to fuel, but the people of Hawaii deserve clean water.
And it's real easy, Jason. All we have to do is relocate them. But that costs $4 to $10 billion with a B. That's why our congressional delegation, these lefties, these climate warriors, they got fuel in their water and they can't utter the words shut it down for good. Why is that? Are they getting too much money from the defense contractors? I don't know. But you know these guys, Jason, Schatz and Hirono. You know who they are. Normally, I mean, they're against the XL pipeline. They're against ANWR. They're against fuel security, against energy abundance. And yet, when it comes to this diesel in the water, they can't say shut it down for good. And that's what I'm saying. We got to relocate it. You got to go to D.C., and get the money. Now, Jason, your experience in D.C. and being close to a lot of the senators and whatnot, you know that one senator, if he's serious, can basically shut the Senate down. If he's not concerned about pissing people off, he can bring it to a grinding halt and not get anything done until their issue is addressed. Correct?
Yeah, and this is a matter of national security, by the way. Hawaii food and water security, we're the projection of power to the east. That's a matter of national security. So, and by the way, $10 million, $10 billion, I know where you can get the money, Representative.
Build back better, baby.
No, I know we can get it. We can get it from the Taliban. We just gave them $85 billion in weapons. $85 billion in weapons went to the Taliban. You just need, you say 4 to 10, let's say it's 12. Does that sound fair?
You know that, I'm glad, let's switch gears. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing to help these people. I saw you early on get involved. You were sending out text messages, asking for help and link people up. When that happened, and I'm sure you felt the same way, when I heard there were 13 Marines who got killed, or was it 12 Marines and one soldier and one sailor, 15 or something. I had tears in my eyes the whole day. I felt so bad for those kids because it didn't have to happen. And you know, Jason, from your military experience and mine, 13 kids getting killed, unless they were sitting on top of each other, that had to be a huge explosion because you're supposed to keep distance between yourself and your other people, so you precisely don't get all whacked in a thing like that. But the incompetence of Milley and Ashton is breathtaking. And the Marine four-star general, I don't know who he is, but I was very disappointed as well.
Well, Milley's press conference, first of all, they're liars. And then when they were let's deviate a little bit. I wanted to do a podcast. You know, I haven't been doing a lot of shows because it's been overwhelming, this Afghanistan project, right? We got pulled into this because people started reaching out to my organization asking for help. And for every one person you save, 100 get your cell phone. A friend of mine recently joked that every Christian in Afghanistan has your personal cell phone. And it has to be true.
I thought Biden said everybody who wanted to leave left.
Oh yeah,
they wanted to leave.
There's still a Marine. There is still a U.S. Marine in hiding in Kabul.
Really?
Yeah, we just finally, right before we went on the air, I was talking to an American citizen that through my organization finally made it back home to California last week with his wife. And it took a long time, you know, from August 13th until last week might not seem like a long time to you, to be in hiding in Kabul. That's a long time. And trust me, he wanted out in July, and the State Department kept kicking his wife's visa interview down the street. So,
because he's married to a local girl.
He's an American. Yeah, he's an interpreter. He was an interpreter that fought alongside U.S. Special Forces for more than a decade. Warrior. He kept saying to me, Jason, I want to come back here and fight these guys. I've been fighting them my whole life. I'm not afraid of them. I just want to get my bride to my home in San Diego, because he was awarded his citizenship because of his bravery and courage in fighting alongside our men and women. Went back to his childhood sweetheart, his high school sweetheart, to marry her. And they were working on her visa interview for 6 months, and it just kept getting kicked down the road. And by God's grace and a lot of hard work, he just finally made it home. There are a lot of tens of thousands of people that qualify for SIV status that are in hiding, that are freezing, that are hungry, and that are scared to death. And I don't want to talk about it. People that my organization was in touch with this week, several people died. It's been a very dark week for us. But I'm glad you brought this. I want to deviate a little bit, because Millie, when that bomb went off outside the Abbey Gate, we knew, my organization knew. In fact, I was live on Steve Bannon. I don't know if you, I know you watch Steve. And I knew within minutes, I said, Steve, a Marine died. I know at least one died. They said there were no U.S. casualties. I said, no, I know. I already know, because we have spotters outside the gate. A Marine died, at least one, and there are a lot of casualties. You know, and they were just so nonchalant about it. Millie gave a speech after the bomb went off that was sort of like a junior high basketball coach after a loss. Like, hey, we're still a great team, and we should be really proud of what we've done and who we are. You're like, brother, no, we're very proud of our men and women in uniform. But you have disgraced that uniform. Just like when the drone strike hit a family. Hit a family that was SIV qualified, by the way.
Yeah.
They should have been given SIV, special immigration visas, but they were hit by a drone. And they said they didn't know for 4 hours. We knew within minutes. My organization knew within minutes. They're dishonest. They have no honor. And so, you know, my organization didn't seek to be involved in Afghanistan. We passively just received requests for evacuation, and our little organization just mobilized, and we haven't stopped, and we won't stop.
Wow. Well, I tell you that they, you know, when they said that we've got a high value target on the way to do harm to American troops, and then they never followed up, you knew it was bull crap.
Right. I want to get back to why you are the man, right-wing conservative Republican Bob McDermott, right? Why are you the man fighting to protect the water supply of Hawaii? Well, it makes sense to me, because you've been consistent in defending the child in the womb from violence in office now for, I mean, when you were first elected in what year?
So 96 to 202 in an area by the Aloha Stadium. I ran for Congress. I lost. I was out of office for 10 years to the day. I moved to a different neighborhood, and I literally was asked to run by Gene Ward. You know, when a politician says they're asked to run for office, the only guy asking them normally is the guy in the mirror. I think you should run. Yeah, I do too. So I was asked to run, and I run by 150 votes, and I've been there ever since. So the people have been returning me. God bless them. And, so we're very fortunate.
So here you have, for three decades now almost, you've been an ardent supporter for life, for traditional values, and it takes courage, right? It takes courage in 1996 in Hawaii, a solid blue state, to speak out in defense of the child in the womb or for traditional marriage. That takes a lot of courage.
You know, we it's never hurt me, though, politically, right? I think the fear people have is the wokesters and the lefties. You know, get your rosary off my ovaries, you know, and they get in your face. But if you're confident and you know what you're believing is the correct thing, they just melt away. And it's never hurt me in an election I've never been shamed. I'll tell you what I'm really proud of is when I go to church and the priest talks, you know, they have around the March for Life time, the priest always gives a lecture about abortion and tell your politician friends, you know, and I'm sitting there. I feel good. I'm not shamed because
right.
I support the church's teaching. And then you've got some guys like your good friend, Willis Sparrow.
You heard what happened when he came to my parish, right?
Yeah. You tell them you don't get communion.
I said, don't present yourself to communion or we'll both end up on the evening news.
But
and
you know,
he didn't. He did not present himself to communion.
He should. They're apostates.
That's right.
And the thing is, the community looks up to these guys.
Right.
And they're got to be held to a higher standard.
But here's the point about Willis Spiro. For you across the planet Earth, people listen to the show all over the world. Willis Spiro is like every other politician. In the late 90s, he was a volunteer for me at Hawaii Right to Life. When he realized it was politically expedient to sell this issue he claimed to care so much about down the river without looking back, he did so without looking back. But by the way, is he in office now? Where is he? Where did he go? He had dreams of grandeur. He had dreams of grandeur.
Yeah.
But Bob, you had the courage, whether you admit it or not, and the truth is you're right, to be pro-life in Hawaii is a plus. But you don't know that at the time. You don't feel that. But, you know, to stand up, when I was in college, I remember saying to my classmates that were environmentalists, I actually use the environment. I would say, I have the courage to speak out against abortion as a college student. And that tells me that I will have the courage to speak out for environmental issues against powerful special interests when I'm 50. And there's a cost to doing that. And this is the point. Brian Schatz built his whole political career. He's a U.S. senator. But his whole career is built on the myth of this little boy picking up cans around Punahou High School, right? That was it. That was the beginning of Brian Schatz's whole thing.
Yeah.
And here he is, Senator Schatz, absolutely silent on a fundamental, non-negotiable issue that directly impacts the health of the children and families of Hawaii. And he's silent. Why?
Yeah.
Because he's never, ever once in his life been on the opposite side of real power.
Yeah. And you know, to further... He, first of all, I don't think he knows which end of the rifle the bullet comes out of, number one. And so when you're talking about strategic assets of fuel and how it fits into the global issue, these guys, they normally this would be a slam dunk for them. Close it down for good. It's going to taint our water. It has tainted our water. But they can't do it. The most he's done is come out and say, we should put the EPA in charge, an honest broker. But that doesn't stop the leaks.
Oh, like the EPA, by the way, like as if the EPA is outside of the reach of the most powerful special interests. It's the glove of the powerful special interests.
Yes, it is. You put the EPA in charge. You know, what a lot of people don't know in Hawaii, like take OSHA. OSHA doesn't exist in Hawaii. They have an office in the federal building. They have maybe one or two employees. They just push paper. The enforcement for OSHA is HIOSH, Hawaii Occupational Health and Safety. Same thing with the EPA. The EPA has one or two people down here, pencil pushers, but the enforcement is done by the Hawaii State Department of Health. They enforce the environmental regulations. So, and he knows that. But for him, that's all he can come up with. When the entire legislature, 45 members, said shut them down for good, you know, I was the first one to do it. And there was a handful of Democrats who wanted an investigation. I said, shut them down. They leak. Here's the problem. Boom, 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 boom. And they were shocked. McDermott, of all people, because I'm so pro-military. But it's the right thing to do. But shots, they put
Congressman Kahele's in the news this week calling – says he's concerned about them, but you led the way.
He's concerned.
Yeah, he's concerned.
I was out there on TV saying they should be shut down. They're going to leak back in October. I have the news clips, and people looked at me like I was crazy.
You called me and told me about this, and I thought you were crazy.
Yeah, I said, Jason, this is drinking water. This is Flint, Michigan, all over again.
Well,
man.
I just didn't believe that it could be true. And then you sent me all these reports, and I began to look into it, and I've been wanting to do this show on this because, you know, Hawaii is where my heart is, but this impacts the national security of our country. It impacts the security of Taiwan.
Yeah.
It impacts the security of the Philippines, South Korea. You know, this is very important. We can't have these tanks leaking. We can't have Hawaii with poison. Maybe I'll start bottling water in Flint. It'll be Flint brand water, and I'll sell it at ABC stores in Waikiki.
So there, you know, there is a solution for this, right? And it's not complicated, and I didn't come up with it. I've gotten whistleblowers come forward to me, give me all sorts of documents. The solution is this. We take half the fuel, and we send it forward to Guam, South Korea, Japan, the Philippines, Alaska, Wake Island, any other place where we have Defense Logistics Agency fuel tanks, and we have them all over. There's over 700 in the Pacific. Send that fuel forward. Then the balance of it, you build 6 to 8 new tanks on the Hickam Air Force Base golf course or Makalapa military housing for officers. They're both on the Pearl Harbor proper base, which is an EPA Superfund site already. So you don't have to worry about polluting any water because there's no potable water to drink in that area. And you build state-of-the-art containment that won't leak tanks. And then the late, great Dan Inouye would look at that as an economic opportunity for Hawaii. He says, I can bring $4 billion home in local construction to solve this problem. I'm going to reach across the aisle to my World War II buddy, Bob Dole, and see if he'll help me, or Ted Stevens. And they always did.
Can I tell
you? Crazy Maisie.
You know, and people ask me about her all the time. They don't believe me when I say, oh, I'm friends with Maisie Hirono. And they go, oh, come on. I'm like, I've known her for 30 years. You know, the Maisie that we knew 25 years ago, she seems like a completely different person to me.
Yes.
It's not the charming, lovely woman that I used to know. I don't know what happened to her when she got to Washington, D.C.
You're exactly hit the nail on the head. Very bitter. When her low point, I think, was during the Kavanaugh hearings. And she's implying that Brett Kavanaugh is the ringleader of this teenage serial rapist gang that cruises Northern Virginia on the weekends looking for targets of opportunity. Oh. I mean, it was ridiculous. And that's what they were trying to smear this poor guy.
He feeds
the homeless.
She would have never said, that's calumny. She knew she was lying. It's disgusting. It's unbelievable. It's beneath her. I don't understand it. Can I tell you why Hawaii is suffering right now? Representative, it's here's why. It's going to sound crazy. Our senators used to be elected by the state legislatures, right? Yep. And if there was one reform I could make in our country right now, it would be a return of electing state senators to the legislatures. And here's what happens. Our senators don't represent the state of Hawaii at all. They are lackeys and stalking horses and step and fetch it's for powerful special interests and powerful states. Because of Senator Inouye's, because he was elected, you know, in the 1952, I think, for the first time, and he'd been in office forever, he had power, and he had real power. But our state senators will never have real power again, and they will always be stalking horses for other special. Brian Schatz thinks not about Hawaii. He does not represent Hawaii. And
no, he doesn't. In fact, he's been in the Senate for a decade now, and when I say this, he's stiff. You know, he's not local. You talk to him, like if you and I are talking, there's a feel we have. We have the sense of place. We belong. We're local. We're Kamaaina. We're not local kids. We're Kamaaina men. We've been around here for 30 years, right? We fit in. We're part of the tapestry. He went to school here at Punahou, which is where extremely rich kids go, Barack Obama and others. He went to Punahou and he's stiff. He's not local. He's been at D.C. He's a product of D.C. He's Chuck Schumer's understudy, very quiet, but he's just as partisan as Chucky Schumer.
Yeah, and they're not pit bulls. I could forgive him for partisanship. I'm working right now, full disclosure, like we're trying to get certain things to happen in Washington to benefit what are called SIVs or special immigration visas for mostly, you know, the men and women that fought alongside our men and women and or work for Western NGOs, American NGOs and Christian minorities. So I'm working with people on the left, right? So when I'm in these meetings, yeah. I tell them I'm hyper-partisan. I'm a conservative Republican. I can get us op-eds in these places. We can get interviews on those places, you know, but I want to do, you know, but I want to be a part of a comprehensive strategy that advances the interests of these vulnerable minorities, not just banging the drum so people look at me or donate to my organization. You know, we're a part of a team that's focused on the interests of the vulnerable. I want to leverage my partisanship and my deep relationships in my community. I can pick up the phone and call this senator or that media personality. And I want to do it on behalf of the vulnerable, not to grandstand. You know, Senator Schatz, he can be a lefty wackadoodle. That's his business. But he should leverage that. He should leverage that for the state of Hawaii, yeah. right? But he's never yes. fighting for us. Ever. For
no. They just had this infrastructure bill, and he was crowing about $2 billion coming to Hawaii. Not 10 cents. For this antiquated fuel tank farm, a national strategic asset that's leaking all over the place, not 10 cents. And this is, you want to talk about infrastructure, these are storage tanks and piping and fuel lines. This is the very definition of infrastructure. We didn't get 10 cents for it. And what's really bad is the media gives him a pass.
Because you hear me? Yeah, because they're partisan. Yeah. Well, yeah, because they're defending their buddy.
I wrote the advertiser. I said, the advertiser is our only paper. They came out with the editorial, can't trust the Navy's word. And I told them, I said, okay, first of all, you've done a great disservice to our military because you're going to take us back to the strained relations of the late 70s, early 80s when, you know, military guys would get beat up for no reason. Other than they're in the military. And you're not holding the people accountable, which is the congressional delegation. They're the only ones who can do anything.
It's not about the military. This is not about the military. Yeah. It's about Congress.
Yes. And I told the paper, I said, you guys, of course, they didn't print it. And they didn't even respond to me. I guess, anyway.
Well, because here's the whole problem. They're all partisan hacks. Right. So you've got the Star advertiser and they're thinking about their buddy Brian Schatz, right? So they're going to protect their buddy. They can care less about the Navy. They don't know, you know, they don't know anyone. Yeah. They don't know anyone in the Navy. They don't care about the Navy. It's just their buddy Brian Schatz. They're not thinking about. And you, when you and I first got involved in politics in Hawaii, across the political spectrum, they were ordered to the interests of the people of Hawaii, right? Senator Inouye was ordered to the interests of the people of Hawaii, right? Maybe to a fault, like he was the captain of pork, you know, bringing pork home.
Yeah.
But he was ordered to his community. These goofballs there, they're ordered to transnational NGOs.
Yeah. So here's the Inouye example of which you just speak. Inouye received the Medal of Honor for World War II. He was a patriot. As I mentioned, he and Bob Dole were best friends. They recovered from their injuries together in Kellogg, Michigan, long before they were elected to the Senate. So they knew each other from that, and they always helped each other. Inouye shut down Ko'olawe Island with Pat Saiki, a bipartisan effort. For your listeners, it's a desolate piece of volcano rock with nothing grows on it. The Navy used it for target practice. The Hawaiians said it's a holy piece of land. Stop it. So Inouye stopped it along with Saiki. And I wondered why Inouye, a war hero, would take away a training asset for the military. Then I was told, Bob, he's looking at it as an economic opportunity for the people of Hawaii. He then went and got $200 million in 1990 to clean up the island. And that went to local Hawaiian contractors. You had to be local. You had to be Hawaiian to clean up this Hawaiian island. So So he would look at this as an economic opportunity. 6 new fuel tanks, that's $4 billion in construction for Hawaii. That makes sense. I'm in, you know. But not these guys. They're short-sighted.
So let me ask you a question, Rep. I've been really watching closely the National Defense Authorization Act this year because there's money in there pertaining to Afghan SIVs, heroes that fought, you know, both of our, well, my son was in the Army. You know, he was in Iraq and Syria, not Afghanistan, but these guys fought alongside boys like our sons and daughters. Yeah. So I'm paying attention to the NDAA to make sure that there's money in there that to take care of these SIVs. Okay. It's almost it's like three-quarters of a trillion dollars. It's like almost three-quarters of a trillion dollars. And they can't find over several years $14 billion. And again, this
is... $4 billion to $10 billion. 4 to 10.
I don't believe you. I think it's going to be $14 billion.
Those aren't my numbers. Those are the Navy's numbers. I'm not smart enough to come up
with it. No, I know. I'm not either, but I'm smart enough to know to, like, multiply it a bit. Okay, let's just say it's $4 billion. Yeah, let's just say let's just say $4 billion. Let's let the taxpayer bite at the $4 billion on the hook and then realize he just caught a $14 billion fish. You can't find $4 billion in, you know, over 5 years, 6 years in the NDAA to secure our fleets, our national security, the security of our allies, and protect the people of Hawaii. Of course they can.
Yes, they can, but if a senator does that, he's got to have support, bipartisan support, and I don't think Schatz has any bipartisan support for anything, because again, he's Schumer's right-hand guy, and $4 billion, that you're going to have to take that away from somebody else, right? Somebody who's been there longer, has their own needs in their community, and you're coming in, and you're hyper-partisan. And then on top of that, the Navy is going to say, look, it's a small leak. We fixed it. We contained it. We're bringing in water purification. This is a national strategic asset. China is on the move in the Pacific. If anything, we need to undergird our assets and buff them up and buff them out, not fiddle fart around with moving them around and building new tanks. They view that as a waste. That's why they're never going to take it out of their own budget, because that's three destroyers, $1.5 billion apiece is a destroyer right now. So that they could buy three new destroyers before they would move the fuel tanks. So that is why I believe Schatz is silent, because he can't do it. He doesn't have the juice, and the Navy told him they ain't moving it anyway.
So, yeah, he doesn't want to step up to the plate knowing he's going to whiff out.
Yeah. He can't do it, so he's talking tough, put the IG in charge. And the Navy tells him at the same time, look, this is a national security asset. Governor Ige ordered them to close the tanks down. I sent him several letters asking him to do so. He finally ordered them, I'm not saying because of me, but he did.
Look, it's because of you. You started this. Now, they've all, you know, wait, how many state reps are there in
51.
Hawaii? 51. 42 signed a letter asking them to be closed.
Right. And I didn't sign it because the letter said we want the Navy to begin drafting a plan to decommission. And I'm looking at this. This is 10 years. These things need to be closed tomorrow. And also because they didn't consult with me, and I've been the leader on this, it was highly partisan, so I said, screw them. I'm not going to lend my credibility to their fantasy.
But see, you've had a lot of experience being in the minority as a Republican in Hawaii that sometimes,
yes.
And you have to make a lot of noise so that they can't deny it, and then they pick up the ball and against their will run it into the end zone, even though they didn't want to.
Yeah. I give you an example. The difference between being a Republican and a Democrat. There's one young Democrat. His name is Sonny Gannigan. You don't know him. He's a freshman. He represents Kalihi. And he wanted to make his name. He's got part of Pearl Harbor. So he wants to put himself on the map. So he writes a letter to the Navy, has a press conference, and he's calling for an investigation. And at the same time he's doing that, I'm saying, shut him down. And he had all the progressives join him calling for an investigation. Then they open the paper and they say McDermott, they're calling for an investigation. McDermott says, shut it down. Because of his calling for an investigation, he was called into the Speaker of the House's office with two other representatives who were Speaker's assistants. And he told them to shut up. They said, let the delegation figure it out. Sit down and shut up. You're a freshman. It's not your place to opine. Now, that's their constraints. Republicans, we're free agents. We can say whatever the hell we want, and we do. So,
yeah, let the delegation figure it out. Well, I hope, is there anyone looking to run for Congress that I should know about?
Well, I told you what my plans are, but those are embargoed right now.
Should I edit that out?
No, you don't have to edit it out.
All right.
But
you know, a lot of people, this show lights up in Hawaii. The map lights up as soon as it drops. A lot of people listen to this in Hawaii. Yeah. So the embargo's over.
I hope so. The embargo's over.
So,
well, I hope so. But my challenge right now, to be frank with you, is that while I'm hammering this red hill and I have insider information, documents, you know, we're going to come out with the solution and all these other things. If I were to announce for a higher office, it would now it would undermine my credibility, and the media would then have a reason not to cover me. They already have excuses, and then they have a reason. Oh, you screw him. He's just making hay running for office. He doesn't really believe it. So that's why we've held off right now. So, but well, we're getting there.
Why anyone from Hawaii would run for Congress is beyond me. Because you have to leave.
Yeah.
But then I left. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm on forward deployment, though. So,
Yeah. So when time comes, I'll ask you to get me on Bannon's show. He seems to have every candidate under the sun on that program.
Well, it's the biggest political podcast in the world now. It's unbelievable.
Is it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I watch it, but, you know, 3 hours of it every day. My goodness. I mean, you get I really like Peter Navarro. He's really interesting, and he calls it like he sees it, you know, which is interesting.
Yeah, no, when I go on a show, every time I've been on a show that day when I go to the grocery store or wherever, someone will say, oh, great job on Bannon's show today. I mean, it's huge.
Do the people in D.C. watch that a lot, like the insiders?
I don't know. I mean, depends, right? It's a very tribal city. So the tribe watches it for sure, right? So
yeah. The
Trump tribe is tuned in. But yeah, there are a lot of, it's a very tribal city and there are a lot of silos.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of crossover in silos. Like I don't think at the State Department, there's a lot of guys on their way to Zumba listening to Bannon.
Talk about weak sauce. That State Department spokesman. Holy smokes. He needs a testosterone replacement therapy or something.
Oh yeah.
And where do they get these guys?
No,
That freak show, the guy who's a transgender surgeon general or something like that. What is he? He's an admiral, but he's a female, or he claims to be a female, but he's a man, right?
He's a man. Yeah, he's a man.
He wants us to join his fantasy with him. You know, this guy has a psychological disorder. He dresses up in women's clothes, thinks he's a woman, and then he's in charge of our health care in some way or another. This is insane.
No, look.
And we're supposed to listen.
If he were to knock on my door and want me to pretend he was a woman, you know, he's selling me cookies or something, I would. Just like when my 4-year-old introduced me to his imaginary best friend, I said hello back.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's a courtesy. You don't want to be mean.
You don't want to be mean.
Pray for the guy.
But here's the problem. You know, there was a story that came out this week that in the State Department. The employees are addled with shame because of their massive failures and they're having anxiety and they have low self-esteem and they're letting them bring their therapy pets to the office. And I don't want to say this because I you know, it's uncomfortable to say, but I mean, Rep, this Afghanistan project has given me anxiety. It's anxious, right? The signal message, the WhatsApp messages all day, every day.
Yes.
And sometimes the messages are very, very sorrowful, and we're helping people in very bad situations. That's one thing. The other thing is to be responsible for an epic failure and to be upset that when you go to, you know, your family Thanksgiving dinner, your cousin Bob is making fun of you because you work for a decrepit failed institution that's abandoned people to death. And instead of being upset at the tragedy, you're upset that people no longer respect you for your bureaucratic position, right? Not that there are, I will tell you, the old joke is, you know, about lawyers, that it's the 99 that give the 1% a bad name. And it's the same thing for the State Department. You know, it's just the 99% of them that give the 1% a really bad name. And I have come to greatly admire the types of people that can trudge their way through these institutions year after year, right? These very glum, dark, lifeless institutions surrounded by lemmings, but that they can be used to harness immense influence and power to help people. That 1%, yeah. And it is 1%, if you know, it's 1%. The 1% that trudges through these institutions to be useful, I have great admiration for. But most of them, it's just, my gosh, it's just a welfare program.
Let me ask you a question. You have much more contact with people in D.C. than I do. Why did so many people hate Trump? And I'm talking about the Brennans, the Haydens. I mean, they just, the 50 intelligence guys who signed that letter about Hunter's laptop had all the earmarks of a Russian PSYOP job. You know, they have no integrity. Leon Panetta signed it.
Yeah, no integrity.
Brennan, of course, signed it. But all these other stiffs signed it without even reading it. And now we know it's all true, right?
Yeah, it's all true. Yeah. And I mean, look, Trump, early on, especially, lended himself, you know, to, he was an easy target. But then once he got into office, there was immense progress being made on issues that should have been important to everyone, right? So, for example, ISIS was crushed in Iraq. The Yazidis and the Yazidis and Christian communities that were on the brink of extinction were saved. And that
I remember. You were very skeptical back in the day about his pro-life credentials. And the guy turned out to be the most pro-life guy we ever had, by far.
Well,
by far. The judges he appointed, going down to speak there in person. I mean, best Reagan could do was a phone call, right?
No, he was the best. The issues that were most important to me, that I always talk about, pro-life, food security, genocide, democide, war. He didn't get us into a war. He crushed our enemies. He put China and Russia in check. He didn't meddle unnecessarily. Obama's CIA fomented a coup in the Ukraine. They waged a drone war of holy hell in Yemen that Trump should have reined it in a bit more, but it was put in check. ISIS was crushed. And this is how you can tell people are a bit proud. I mean, I was very outspoken in my distrust of Trump. I wrote a lot about it. He has no record. He said he was pro-choice. Now he's magically pro-life. Like, I've heard this before. I don't trust him.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz is someone I knew and I trusted. And so I was a big Cruz guy, you know. And so much so that I was at the convention with Bannon. And Bannon's like, you need to get on the team. You need to join the team. And I was like, I'm not joining this team. I don't trust this guy. But of course, quickly, he began to earn my trust. And when I see some conservative leaders, these quote-unquote never-Trumpers, I think that they were proud, that they were actually upset that Trump turned out to be a good president, because they wanted to be the one reading the tea leaves. They wanted to be the one that was right about this guy. Instead of being grateful that they were wrong. Like, I was completely grateful that I was wrong. When Roe v. Wade overturns in June, you can send Donald Trump a thank you letter to all those pro-lifers with pristine hands. I think it's just a lot of pride. And he came outside of the establishment. Imagine being one of those Washington insiders, those gray men that, you know how plotting, what I love about you, Representative, is, you know, you have ambition to serve your community. You're not without ambition, but you are yourself. You're not willing to trade. Everyone in Hawaii, for those of you not from Hawaii, Representative McDermott is known, and you have a big personality. You've never put it in check, even though sometimes maybe you should, like when you're on Comedy Central.
Let's not talk about that.
you can tell the story. Don't tell the whole story.
But no, I won't. But when I said he was talking about abortion, and I brought up Margaret Sanger was a eugenicist, and she started it because they wanted to exterminate black and brown people. They didn't believe me, right? And this is a national show. And I said, no, she was a eugenicist. She wanted to say, oh, well, I don't think that's true. Well, of course it's true.
Right. Yeah, no, right. So, but think of this, Rep. Like, you've never checked your personality or your family. You've never sacrificed your wife or your children for your ambition. Look at Joe Biden. Just dragged his family down the street. And you've not sacrificed your personality. So you have a city of people that have been plotting since they were in eighth grade. They all think they're going to be president of the United States. Mayor Fossey told that to me once. We were talking about Jeremy Harris. He goes, Jeremy Harris thinks he's going to be president of the United States. And I said, that guy? And he said, to be fair, everyone who gets elected state representative thinks one day they're going to be president of the United States. Okay,
that's true.
And
the
building's
full of egos.
So, but imagine you're in Washington, D.C., right? And from the 22-year-olds to the 60-year-olds, they're all ambitious, and they all sand their edges off. They all basically strangle their personality in the crib. They never get to be who they are. They never get to blossom or flourish as human beings. And they're second guessers, as the great human rights activist from China, Wei Jianxing, said. They're always thinking what other people are expecting of them, and then they're presenting that, right? Well, then you have Donald Trump. Well, this guy comes walking into the, like, whatever, right? And then they bring up some true things that were quite embarrassing, some scandals with women, and Trump would kind of smile and shrug and, like, move along. Like, okay, you said it.
Yeah.
What?
Well, and he wasn't in politics then. He was a TV star.
Right.
He never thought he'd run for office.
They envied him.
I think that
that's the problem. And now this is my long answer to your question why they hated him. They envied him. They envied him that he didn't have to grovel to others for money, that he never checked his personality. And they all thought in the back of their minds that I murdered my own personality. I've measured every step so I could have political success. And this clown's going to come, you know, making up a ruckus, tripping into the city, into the White House. That infuriated them.
Yeah. I wonder, just speculating here, pure speculation, if the Wuhan virus was released on purpose because Trump was so tough on the Chinese and they wanted him out and they knew that this would cause chaos and that's what cost him the election, among other things, but people felt he didn't show enough empathy, is what I was told, to those suffering with it. But he got COVID himself, my goodness.
You know, here, what's interesting, Rep, is you mentioned that you bring this up. Do you know how we know that there was something nefarious behind COVID? We're not allowed to freely discuss the origins of COVID, right?
Yeah.
Not allowed to be.
You'll be banned.
Just Maxwell trial, not allowed to be heard, not because it's so clean. Not because it's not scandalous, it's because it's going to be quite the scandal. It's going to be shocking. We don't want to have to hear what she has to say. We are not looking at, and why are they not looking at the origins of COVID? Why aren't they taking this very seriously? Because they probably have figured it out, and they don't want people peeking in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that I think Navarro nails it on the head every day. You know, it's the Fauci gain of function. And then they let the Chinese let people travel all over the world, but not outside of Wuhan, right? I mean, they wanted it to spread.
Yeah, really unbelievable. Right? Now, what is that I'm hearing in the background, Representative?
I'm sorry, my grandkids. Honey, bring me two sodas.
No, that's why we love podcasts. So, well, let's wrap this up. What's call to action? So people listening all over the world, but especially those of us in the United States and across Hawaii, this is a national security issue as much as it is also a Hawaii health issue. So what are we supposed to do now?
I tell you what you can do. You know, I wasn't prepared for that, but go to Facebook, Bob McDermott, Bob, B-O-B, McDermott, M-C-D-E-R-M-O-T-T, Hawaii. I'll pop up. Just like the page, and we're posting developments as they come about, and then we boost them so the whole state knows what the heck's going on with regard to the fuel. So that's one way we're getting the word out.
And I'll put that in the show notes. So I'll put your this is your campaign face. This is your public Facebook page. I will put it in the show notes. People can follow you. And I mean, this is just like the Flint, Michigan water story is a national issue. This is even more so because it's not only about the health of the people of Hawaii; it's about national security. And it just seems gross incompetence.
A little bit about me. Go to votemcdermott.com. I have a bunch of pictures there. I've got to update the site, but it tells you you're probably in those photos too, Jason. Some of them pro-life speeches.
Right on. Well, Representative, tell Oahu I miss her. Tell your family aloha.
And will do.
I look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, Jason. Aloha. God bless. Thanks for your time.
God bless.
All right. Bye.
That was a good break for me. I do apologize. I've been getting a lot of nice emails from you folks. And I am really grateful. Hey, Rep. Are you still
I'll get off.
Yeah, I can still hear the background. Sorry, guys. This was a good break for me just to talk to an old friend, State Representative Bob McDermott. He has been informing me for months and months and months now about this crisis. I have been up to my eyebrows in Afghanistan. I've gotten a lot of nice notes from folks saying that they miss the podcast being as regular as it was. They would hope I do more shows, but they have been following the work we're doing in Afghanistan, and they completely understand. And so just to talk to State Representative Bob McDermott, someone who's been my friend since I was a college Republican and he was a young state representative, it's good to talk to him and share that conversation with you because this is important. I do want to give you a little bit of an update on Afghanistan for those of you who not only listen to the show, but follow our work at the Vulnerable People Project, which is a program of Hero Inc. You know, in August, mid-August, August 13th, I believe, we received our first request for evacuation, which isn't something that we did or do. We do advance the interests of vulnerable communities, and we do it through writing op-eds, ghostwriting op-eds for influencers, structuring campaigns, this podcast, movies. But sort of this sort of direct relief emergency evacuations isn't something we were built to do, but no organization was built to evacuate vulnerable people from Afghanistan. So when the first request came in on August 13th, it was actually from a friend. I guess the first day of requests came from friends. That first request came in and we mobilized as in this very office. I mobilized as I was fighting COVID pneumonia. And I started putting together a team to evacuate my friends, business partners, mother-in-law. And by God's grace, she is now in the United States with her family. And then I got a second call within hours from a friend's nephew who is a Marine captain that wanted me to help evacuate his interpreter, which by God's grace, he was the first out within days. And then somebody I went to college with pinged me and said that a martial arts champion from Afghanistan that belonged to the same martial arts organization that I used to fight for when I was friends with this gentleman that pinged me from Guam was being hunted by the Taliban. Him and his family were being hunted. And if I knew anyone that could evacuate them, and I said, well, I happen to be evacuating people. And now he has been, he was safely evacuated. And then within days, our list went from maybe 25 to 100 to 500 to 600 to almost 1,000. And our first list was evacuated. Everyone on our first list was evacuated. But other organizations asked us for help. And now, we have continued. This is the work that we're doing. We're supporting safe houses across Afghanistan and Pakistan. We are providing food and charcoal in Afghanistan for heat. We're also helping those in Pakistan to meet those needs for food and housing, of course. And we also have people in different lily pads, what we call lily pads. They're countries that where folks will not be permanently resettled, but where they're in camps now, waiting to be processed to go to their final destination. We have recruited people that we know, pastors and Christians and their leaders in those communities. We've partnered with them to make sure that the elderly, that mothers and newborns with newborns and vulnerable minorities, the blind, the disabled, are being especially taken care of. And that's happening in the lily pads. And now we're beginning to help with the legal process of working with visas, humanitarian parole, even getting landing rights to different countries for planes, and then permanent resettlement, which is helping people once they get to the United States. Today was great because I began my day calling people that have already been resettled in the United States to make sure that they're okay. Then I called our contacts working with our groups in the lily pads to check to see if they were all right. And now when I get off this show, as they're beginning to wake up in Pakistan and Afghanistan, I'm going to begin calling into Pakistan and Afghanistan, making sure that everyone is okay. And, you know, sometimes these calls are very hard. I called a gentleman who is in a lily pad who was evacuated because probably something too sensitive to talk about, but the Taliban tortured his father this week, and now we are moving rapidly to try to evacuate his father, who's now become vulnerable because they're looking for his son. And so these calls can be generally there. We're doing okay. Thank you, brother, for the food, da-da-da-da-da. Any hope, any luck on visas? But sometimes you get these very hard stories like we got today with this one gentleman and his father. And so that's what I've been doing. And so to do a podcast, I feel like if I were to come on and start doing these shows over the past couple of months, I would just be depressed. You'd get depressed just listening to me talk. Because it's been, you know, my heart. I used to hear people say, oh, my heart hurts. And I thought that my heart hurting, that expression was like a figure of speech. But since August 13th, my heart hurts, literally. And it hasn't stopped hurting. And it's not just because of the great sorrow and suffering that has been inflicted on the people of Afghanistan. It's because I believe that I am morally culpable as a citizen in a constitutional republic. Believe that. I believe all of us are. And Five for Fighting has a song about it called There's Blood on My Hands. There's blood on my hands. There's blood on our hands. There's blood on your hands. Now, some of us are more culpable than others. I am more culpable than you, right? For sure. Because I don't think, most likely, you don't run an organization that people support to advance the interests of the vulnerable. That's my job, right? If your job is to run a business and meet payroll for 200 employees and coach a little league team and care for your mother with Alzheimer's, you're probably not that culpable, you know? But if your job is to run an organization called the Vulnerable People Project and your mission statement is to support the most vulnerable people in the world at the most vulnerable moments of their life, as far as a non-State Department employees or non-DOD or White House employees, I'm probably right behind them in responsibility for this, and I feel that. And so, yeah, my heart hurts. That's why the show hasn't been as frequent. But here's the good news. We have been structuring up. If you go to thegreatcampaign.org, you'll see our leadership team is growing with some very talented people. We're going to be doing a Christmas party, I think, online, where you can meet a lot of our team and you can meet some folks that we've been involved in evacuating and resettling from Afghanistan, and maybe some celebrities that have reached out to us. And one of my good friends, I'm going to ask her if she'll maybe, who's a celebrity, and I think you'll be excited to hear a Christmas song from her. I'm going to reach out to her. But as the organization is growing, and I'm getting a lot of support, a lot of the weight is coming off my shoulders. And one of the other things we're doing at the Vulnerable People Project is we're going to be partnering with folks from Afghanistan that we've been involved in rescuing or we've met along the way that we greatly respect. And we're going to be partnering with them to found a new 501c3 organization with the goal of supporting for the long march, the long game. And we have movies to make. We have a lot of other communities that I feel we've been neglecting, like what's happening in Nigeria, for example. I get pinged a lot from folks in Nigeria. Like, you need to speak up for what's happening to us. And we do need to do that. For sure, we need to do that. And so I'm excited to be launching this new organization, hopefully by summer. It'll be in full swing, and it will be taking over most of the responsibilities that that have fallen upon us for the evacuation and resettlement of folks from Afghanistan. And we've also grown our team. So that means I'm going to be doing more shows, and I hope to be doing some more fun shows. I'm going to have a great New Year's guest. It's going to be Build Your Body Back Better with a legend in sports and a hero of mine. And I can't wait to announce that show. And it's really kind of selfish because I want to talk to him about how we, as we get older, we've had COVID, I had COVID pneumonia, and my lungs were ripped apart. How do we build our bodies back better? I just want to do fun shows while we will still advocate and do our mission. But yeah, and so we're going to be doing more and more shows. So with that, I will just say, I hope you're having a blessed Advent. As the Jones family, we are. And also, we're going to send Christmas cards out to everyone. I want you to get on our list. Go to thegreatcampaign.org and just sign up. Give us your email so we can send you a Christmas card. You can meet my family and the team or donate at thegreatcampaign.org. I will say we are in aggressive fundraising mode. I've never worked so hard to fundraise. And we need to raise $300,000 by December 31st to meet our immediate needs. In our work in Afghanistan, we are approaching, I think, 70,000 from different sources. So if you go to thegreatcampaign.org, you can support our work there as we stand with Christians and other minorities and SIVs and American citizens stuck in Afghanistan. And also, you know it, your house should be filled with MyPillow products. Like right now, on my feet, I am wearing the MyPillow slippers. I was going to move them. Like, why are those under my desk? And I'm like, you know what? I need to keep them there and wear them while I do the show so I can remind people about how wonderful the MyPillow slippers are. And I had the privilege of staying at the Trump Hotel. And if you have stayed at the Trump Hotel, it's over. Like, you're going to go to the Ritz and you're going to feel like you're at the no-tell motel on the side of the highway with the sign with only the E is colored, you know? And you're like, is that even a motel anymore? I don't even know if that's a motel anymore. Like, I don't know. There's like an old dinosaur from the 50s on the side and a swing set that's rusty with no swings on it. That's what every hotel seems like after you stay at the Trump Hotel. Well, when you put on the MyPillow slippers, it's like the Trump Hotel Presidential Suite for slippers. Does that even make sense to you? Now, I'm putting them on right now, and it makes sense to me. And if it doesn't make sense to you, you got to get the slippers, put them on, and then you're going to go, oh, I get it. So go to MyPillow.com, use the code Jones, and you will get deep, deep discounts on all of the MyPillow products for all of your relatives for Christmas. I don't know about you. I just made a resolution. I went to a box store. I had to go to a box store for light bulbs, I think. And I was like, what was I thinking going to a box store this time of year? And I resolved to not go to a box store till January 15th. I'm done. There's no reason to go to a box. If I need light bulbs, I'm going to the CVS down the street, right? Okay, listen. You go to MyPillow.com. You don't need to go to... All your Christmas gifts are there for everyone on your Christmas list. Your employees, there. Your uncle, there. Everybody, go to MyPillow.com. No. I mean, come on. Don't be getting any child. Okay, kids. Don't get any kids MyPillow gift. MyPillow sponsors the show. You know, as much as I love MyPillow, if I was 9 years old, I would prefer a plastic machine gun, you know. But every adult or teen, even preteen on your list, tweens, teens, adults, elderly, you know, if it's not a toy machine gun or a doll, it better be MyPillow. So go to MyPillow.com, use the code Jones for those amazing, unspeakable, deep, deep discounts. This has been the Jason Jones Show. Aloha.
This has been the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media.